Hey, buddy, what's up, brother?
Oh, man, just, you know, I feel like I just saw you.
It seems like it was like minutes ago or
I know, yeah, at least hours.
Hours ago, it was. And the best part is you bought me a coffee, which was really exciting. And you didn't drink my coffee because you usually steal my food.
I do.
Yeah, but you didn't take my coffee because I actually told you I guard my wine, my dessert. But I actually think about it, I guard my coffee too, so.
Yeah, you and me both, brother. But, you know, I know you had to leave New Bremen in a rush because we have an awesome author and just a great guest today, Mark Hunter. So what do you think that instead of we sit here talking and running our mouths, we get to him?
Well, we are pretty impressive and exciting to each other. But, well, yeah, I think Mark will be what's more fun. So let's go do that.
Well, he has a hard out, so we got to get him in.
Yes, let's get him in here. Let's go.
All right.
Come on. Push some buttons, Wes.
I know.
Welcome to Building Wins Live with host, the hybrid road warrior himself, Randy Chafee, and producer-director Wes Wyatt.
Whether we're talking about sales, marketing, tech, or industry news, we want to bring you the best tips, tricks, and info to build wins.
Now, let's get to the show.
Mark, you made it out of the green room.
I made it out of the green room, but I heard you talking about coffee, and nobody bought me coffee today. So, you know, this show
it's in the mail.
Continue. It's in the mail. Thank you. It's in the mail. That's good.
Well, it checks in the mail, so with the coffee's in the mail, too.
Right. Yeah. I can imagine only the size of check that you write. Not.
Yes. So. Yes, not. It's quite small. Yeah. Like non-existent. The paper's worth more than the amount that I write in. So, it's not often that you get the sales hunter himself. Mark, it is a pleasure.
Well, thank you. I always enjoy talking sales because, I mean, you know, as I always say, sales is not a job. It's not a profession. It's a lifestyle. And Exactly. Clearly you buy into that lifestyle, too. Just looking at you chilling out there with a cup of coffee and probably going to a glass of wine shortly.
I'm staying at a hotel in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Go Blue. As we've already discussed, and we allow Wes to still direct and produce the show, even though he's from that naughty, awful state down south that we won't say. But there's a Bravo's right across in the mall where I'm at. And so get that Go Bucks off of there. This is not right. Anyway, I can't.
Hold it. What is a Buckeye? I mean, come on. Give me a break. What's a Buckeye? Okay. I'm just, you know.
Seriously, you're proud of being a useless nut? I mean, that makes you proud?
Ooh. Man, you know, he Think could end the it. Show right now because he is the
I
producer
could.
And the director.
So. He could. I like to press the limits, though. So. I'm a sales guy. 4+ decades, I press limits, buddy. But, so I'm going to be having a Cabernet or two this evening, probably with a little Italian. So, but, yeah, you're right. I've been in this crazy, weird, goofy, fun, and when I say a lot, love what I do and do what I love, world of sales for 4+ decades, Mark. And I wouldn't want to do anything else. And I know you're the same.
Yeah. You know, isn't it amazing how sales undoubtedly changed in our heads? Because you're probably like me, like most people when they get into sales, they think it's just about selling stuff. It's just selling stuff, taking money. I mean, I kind of viewed early on in sales, customers were like bowling pins. My job was to knock them down, take their money and run. And it took me a few years and getting fired from a few sales jobs to begin to realize that, no, it's a service business. It really is about just having a conversation with the customer, finding out what their needs are, what their challenges are, and helping them with that. That's a completely different perspective that I have today versus what I had umpteen years ago when I began in sales.
It is. And isn't it funny? A few years ago, somebody asked me, along the lines of what you're saying, when did you start selling quite a bit? And I said, when I stopped selling. And that's along with what you're saying. I don't sell anybody. I almost hate the term salesman or sales rep or whatever. Using a little bit of a spinoff of a Zig Ziglarism, right? But, you know, I'm just a help others get what they want or need type person, right?
But you know what's funny is when you and we've all heard that line. We've all heard that line, right. Variations of that line for years. And it really doesn't sink in initially until it finally does really sink in. And then you really begin to realize that, whoa, I mean, I look at my business today and it is all because of relationships and conversations and so forth. And but it comes down to one central thing. Nobody's going to do business with me unless I can help them identify a need, a challenge, a pain, a gain, something that they need help with. Now, they don't always know what that is. And it's my job to help uncover that and so forth, because they may think it's the pain is X, but really the pain is Y. So through my questioning, through my conversation, I'm going to help them see that it's Y, because I didn't know it was Y either. But we get to that Y, and then I can help them, because my definition of sales is to help others see and achieve what they did not think was possible. You know, you wake up in the morning and you say that. I'm going to tell every listener out there, wake up in the morning and say that. Your goal today is to help others see and achieve what they didn't think was possible. That's pretty cool. And oh, by the way, not only is that the definition of sales, but it's the definition of a leader, a great leader. That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. And you think about it, you are a leader, even if you're not a sales leader, as in a VP of sales or a sales director, because you're leading that sales process, right?
Yes, you're leading that. You're leading that individual person you're speaking with right then and there. And again, that's this whole ability. We increase our value when we have the ability to go one-on-one with a customer. And that's not one-on-one in a cage match. No, it's one-on-one in listening to them. And that's where I say one of the big mistakes that salespeople make is they want to tell the customer all this stuff. No, I don't want to tell the customer anything. I want to just ask questions. If I ask questions, it's amazing at what I'll hear. That, to me, is absolutely valuable. That's cool.
Well, it is, because the customer, if you ask enough questions and listen long enough, they will tell you exactly how to sell them. Right? You don't have to do the massive close at that point, because you're closing all the way through. The natural response is, geez, Mark, I would like to buy your service, product, whatever, right?
Yeah. You know, it goes back to something very interesting, and it is, and I love asking people this question. How many times do you have to discount a sale in order to close it? You know, how many times do you find yourself having to negotiate? Oh, negotiation is so painful. And when I hear people say we have to discount or our close ratio is so poor, I'll say, hey, you know what? Your challenge is not your negotiating skills. It's not your closing skills. It's your prospecting skills. You haven't spent enough time up front prospecting the right people and really taking the time to do in-depth discovery. Because if you do those pieces up front, it's amazing at how easy the rest of the process is. It just happens. Just flat out happens.
You just said something that, so prospecting, because I know one of your books is High Profit Prospecting. We think of prospecting for what we think it is, to find somebody to go talk to and sell. I mean, putting in elementary terms. But isn't it important to make sure, like you just said, I think, get the right customer that fits us up front, because now we're not going to waste a lot of our time, their time, because we're not all for each other, right? Well, you and I just may not be a fit.
Yeah, and I know you and I are not made for a fit. No, anyway.
Wes, hit that button.
This is what's so, yeah, this podcast ended right now. this is what's, it's not sales' job to go boil the ocean. It's not our job. We can have an incredible level of success by dealing with a limited number of people. And that's one of the challenges we in sales have to look at. I one of the metrics, I hate it when salespeople say, well, I get measured by the number of leads I have or the number of prospects I have in my pipeline, you know, number of things in my pipeline. No, that's garbage. That's garbage. I want to understand the quality. I want to prospect you out of my list, so I actually can spend more time with fewer prospects. Because when I can spend more time with fewer prospects, man, it's amazing how much better I'm going to understand you. And I'm going to be able to generate sales. Because this is what's interesting. The only good sale is the one that leads to the next sale. Think about that for a moment. The only good sale is one that leads to the next sale, because it means you've been able to help the customer so much that they either tell about you to other people, you know, they share you with other people, or they bring you more business, or they introduce you to more people. But it means that there's a level of satisfaction that has been achieved. That I tell you what, that's a metric. Sales managers, sales leaders, that's a metric you want to be measuring.
See, that makes a lot of sense, because again, you're not wasting precious sales time, if you will, but the chance that sale is going to close, and the chance that it's going to be a good sale is, and we already said it's a good sale is because you get the next one. Because if you don't get the next one, you're constantly on that search for the next sale. That's, you start all over from scratch again, right? And if you have 10 customers and all 10 customers give you 10 more, it doesn't take a lot of math to figure that out, does it?
It doesn't. And that's why we end up working too hard. Because here's the other piece. And we both have used that word, closing a sale. That is so wrong. I don't want to close a sale. I want to open a relationship. Because again, when I open a relationship, what am I doing? I'm creating the opportunity for more business. I'm creating the opportunity for more to happen. And to me, that's a lot easier way to build my book of business. Now, that does not preclude me from prospecting. No, I want to be prospecting. But again, I prospect a very narrow segment, my ideal customer profile. And I get very tight, very specific with that. Because what happens is that way I know this vertical, this subset of an industry, we'll say. But I know that so well that I can come across so confident and competent, not arrogant, but confident and competent, because I know questions asked. I have the ability to share expertise. I have the ability to share ideas. I can put myself into their shoes. And this is one of those things that drives salespeople crazy, is when they're sitting there trying to sell to anybody and everybody. Oh, if they have a heartbeat, I'm going to sell to them. That is a big fat waste, unless you're selling heart valves. And even then, okay, that was weird. I don't know where I was going with that.
But I like this, strangely. That's my weird personality. But no, you're right. I like that focused prospecting approach, as opposed to a rifle approach as opposed to a shotgun, right?
Yes. Yes. We become so much better when we do that. And think about this. If you were to wake up in the morning and know that you're going to be able to have conversations with people who you really understand them, you understand their world, you understand their business, and you understand all those things. Think about that. Isn't that going to excite you? And it's going to give you a lot more confidence versus waking up in the morning and say, man, I've got to make 100 dials today and I have no idea who I'm calling.
Yeah.
Wow. That'd be a
tough road to hoe right there, as I say.
Tough road to hoe. Yep. That's why I say get very, very specific. Because again, what I want to do is I want to spend more time with fewer prospects. And you know what's interesting is the prospect's going to thank you. The prospect is going to thank you because you're helping them. And there's so many things that we can say about this, but here's what I find very interesting. I reach the sweet zone when the customer is sharing with me proprietary information. Right. Now think about this. Proprietary, that's information not known publicly. They're either sharing with me information about their business or about themselves. But that's the sweet zone, because what does that mean? That means that the prospect, a customer, has got a level of confidence with you. They are confident in you and they believe in you and they're willing to share that. To me, that's the sweet zone. And when I reach that point, I know that I can move myself through to be able to secure the sale.
Well, exactly. Because you've become a confidant, right? And once you become a confidant with them, then you're a trusted advisor. Again, words we all toss around in this, you know, sales world, but I think it's important, because I don't want to be seen as Randy, your sales guy, or your sales rep. I want to be first your friend, your buddy, the guy that takes care of you, the guy that cares about you, and the guy I trust to take care of me. And if I do those things, then we're going to build a long-term relationship that, again, like you said earlier, leads us to the additional sales. And the sales you don't have to work as hard for, right? Because this is repeat business.
Oh, so much of what you just said there is so valuable, because now what happens is the customer not only has confidence in you, they're sharing with you proprietary information. Mm-hmm. But another way I gauge this is, are they asking you questions about something you don't sell? Now, stop and think about this. They're going to view you as a confidant when they're starting to ask you questions about things that go way beyond what you sell. Because that means they see you as an expert, the confidant. And again, that's another big signal. And when I get that signal, guess what? I know that not only am I going to be able to secure the sale, but there's going to be more business coming as a result of it. Right. Because I'm viewed at a higher level than
right.
salespeople are viewed.
Right. Love what you just said, because one of my favorite calls to get, and I love it when a customer, friend, client will call me up and say, I don't know or think if you have this, but do you know where I could get it? God, I love that.
Right. Because that means they have confidence in you that you're going to help them. And that to me says that you've created a relationship. Mm-hmm. And again, you start, you know, if that doesn't excite you and confirm in your mind why we're in sales. Right. And I happen to believe, and I know you say, you know, sales kind of a weird word. I think sales is a noble profession when we look at it as helping people. Because mm-hmm. when we help, I had lunch today with a gentleman, and he's having some real issues in his business. And I have zero ability to sell him, zero ability because of what he does and so forth. But I was able to share with him some advice, some ideas, and connect him with some other people. Wow. You know, he left lunch very thankful. Yes, he did pay for lunch. He left very thankful. And I left feeling, you know what? I helped somebody. I helped somebody.
Right.
And that's going to fuel me not only the rest of today, but into tomorrow and everything else. Right. Yeah.
And if you operate that way, doing it with empathy and caring about the customer and about helping them, and I know it goes against what a lot of sales guys are taught and trained, but you've got to, and this is my take, you got to set the commission, or people talk commission breath, right? You got to put that away. And what is best for this customer, period. And if you do that, your overall sales will be much, much higher, right?
Oh, it will be. And this is what's challenging, because you can be at the end of the quarter. You know, you can be at the end of the quarter and I got to get this deal. And you, even in that moment, you still have to play the long game, because there may be deals that you say, you know what, it's not right for me to get this deal. It's not right. And I, in turn, need to do something. Because here's the other piece. And it's the land and expand principle. Anytime I land a sale, I want to be able to expand on it. And if I haven't been able to expand on it, that means, in other words, I land this sale and I expand out by other services or other goods I sell the person, or I expand because they're going to refer me to somebody else, or there's other divisions in their company, whatever. But again, it comes back to what we were talking about earlier. If there is not additional revenue, profitable revenue, profitable, big difference here, and profit's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Don't think discounting your price is a good thing for the customer. Because you know what's interesting? People automatically equate the price to the value they're going to get for it. Right. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. I mean, if you are sitting down at a nice restaurant and you're a connoisseur of wines, and they had a wine there that was $2 a glass, you probably would not drink it. Nope.
Correct.
Not going to drink it, because there's something about that price point that helps equate value. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you are picking out a bottle and the wine steward is saying, oh, well, you know what? I can give you 30% off of this bottle. No, Because wait a minute, hold it. You're looking to have this bottle of wine because it's part of the experience. And the price, the presentation, all of that is part of the experience. And salespeople have to remember that. Because again, it's how we position ourselves. And how we position ourselves absolutely determines value. Let me give you a very quick example. There's a lot of things that I can probably buy at a Walmart store that I pay very low price for that are similar, probably not the same thing, but similar, that I might be able to buy at a Macy's or even a Nordstrom. But you know what's interesting? If I buy it at a Macy's or a Nordstrom, I'm going to place more value on it than I would at the Walmart. You see, now think about this for a moment. Walmart, Macy's, Nordstrom all know that there's a certain type of customer that they're appealing to. See, you know, I always say you can't take a Walmart shopper and make them a Nordstrom customer. Right. Because Nordstrom has their customer base and Walmart has their customer base and they stay in their lane. Mm-hmm. When you stay in your lane, then price becomes part of that value equation. And see, even at Nordstrom, price becomes part of the value equation because price is part of the experience and what they're going to get out of it. Same thing at Walmart. Yeah. So anyway, I mean, we could go on and on, but it's all about this whole value. And again, it comes back to we as salespeople begin to set that up by the questions we ask, the conversations we have, and how we handle things.
Exactly. And when we establish ourselves as that confidant, that trusted advisor, that leader up front, it's easier to naturally stand your ground and for it to be accepted by the customer that this is the price I need. And where I want to go second with this, Mark, is when salesmen get discount frenzy, right? And they get too, I tell Mark by my body language or something else that, well, there's a little room and I know this is a little high, but don't worry. At the end, if you do that, you're going to expect that from me. And we just drove the value of that proposition down, right? And you got to quit apologizing for your price, right?
You do. And this whole thing, you never ask the customer, well, what do you think of this price? No. Customers don't buy anything. They invest. And we have to look at this. That I don't care if it's B2B, B2C, or B2G, business to government. They invest. Because you're investing because you want this problem solved. You want even somebody going to the mall or going on Amazon to buy some clothes or whatever. You're investing because I want to have this certain look. I want to have this certain thing. So we're investing. We always have to keep in mind that we are looking to create value to make it worthy of the customer investing. And when we do that, price becomes becomes a non-issue. Mm-hmm. You know, another example I love to use is you can have on any commercial airline flight, people having 6, 8, 9, 10 different airfares on that flight. Now, if you're the grandpa and grandma who are retired and going to visit the grandkids, and you don't care if you fly on Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday or whatever, you're absolutely going for the cheapest price. Because again, it's totally irrelevant if I fly on Tuesday or Wednesday, I'm going to go on the cheapest price. However, you're a business person and you have to get from point A to point B by a certain time because you're going to have a meeting to potentially close a $1 million deal. Price is not the same issue.
Right.
You know that you got to be there in time to have that meeting to close that $1 million deal. See, mm-hmm. So value takes on different levels depending on who you are. And it's our job as a salesperson. And this is the whole thing. Salespeople, it's not your job to determine value. It's the customer's job to tell you what the value is. Big difference. Over the years, I've had a chance to work with a lot of the automotive manufacturers. And we'll use Mercedes-Benz, for instance. There's a reason why salespeople at a Mercedes-Benz dealership drive Mercedes-Benz cars. because they have to experience it. They have, you know, if all they drove was a Hyundai or a low end Chevy or Toyota or something like that, they wouldn't understand the value of a Mercedes. So to them, the price would be discounted. But because they're driving a Mercedes, they begin to understand the value. We have never assume, because this is the other big thing. Salespeople do assumptive selling way too often. We assume this is what the customer, hold it. Tell the customer, tells me explicitly, I can't assume anything.
That's a great point, because I was thinking about some past scenarios where I'd train some counter salespeople or inside salespeople, and it was a high-end product that they maybe would never buy or maybe couldn't afford to buy or whatever the case may be, but they automatically assumed that their customer was not going to afford or want or spend the money. And it's like, will you stop doing that?
Because
you don't know. You don't know until they, like you just said, until they tell you.
This is the same thing with prospecting. Well, I've called them three times and they haven't responded. So they must not be interested. I don't know. Until I have a conversation with them, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Exactly. So prospecting. So you wrote the book on prospecting, high profit prospecting. If you're in, B2B sales or any kind of where there's repeat business, so not like a one and done type of thing, how much time, rule of thumb in Mark's world, should you spend on maintaining existing business, all the stuff that goes into doing that, right, versus looking for brand new business? Because I think we all understand, and you're smiling because I know where I'm going, you can spend so much time looking for the next new customer that you forget the most important one you have is the guy that's going to continue to buy from you, because that new guy is still a make-believe maybe, where the existing customer is probably a forever if we take care of them.
Yeah, this is one that's very, very difficult. And a lot of sales organizations kick themselves or shoot themselves in the foot because they're not structured properly. And the actual time is going to vary based on the purchase frequency, the size of the purchase, and the number of transactions, number of sales a salesperson has to have over the course of a year. I'll give you two examples. If you're selling something that is a low-end item and is purchased frequently, guess what? I'm going to be back in touch with you continuously. I mean, I do work in the transportation space where it's, hey, you know, moving cargo, putting it on truck, moving from point A to point B, and temporary labor. Those are services sold to companies that are buying that every day. So guess what? You're going to be back in touch with those people all the time. Conversely, you may have something that's low end, we'll say, but they only purchase it once every 2 or 3 years. Well, then again, I'm not going to be back in touch with you as much. So how does this break down? I like to say it always starts off at 60-40. In other words, 60% of my time is going to be spent with existing customers, 40% of my time with prospecting. And as my book of business, so to speak, and my sales cycle begins to increase or decrease, I'm going to move that number to potentially 70-30 or maybe 80-20. 80-20, it may even be 80% with existing customers. Because, wow, every time I land an existing customer, there's a steady stream of business that comes off it. Great. And I only have to do 20% prospecting. Or it may be flipped around the other way because they don't purchase but once every 5 years. So now I'm just going to spend 20% with existing customers trying to get referrals, et cetera, and 80% in terms of true prospects. So the number is going to vary all over the place. But here's what I tell people. Regardless of how good your repeat customers are, how good all that is, everyone must keep prospecting and never, ever allow it drop below 15%. Because prospecting is a muscle. It's like going to the gym. If you don't go to the gym, it becomes pretty painful. next time you're in the gym. And the best way to stay in the groove of prospecting is by always doing it. So even the most seasoned veteran, I tell this of like insurance people. If you're an insurance agent and you've been in business for 20, 25 years, you've got this steady book of business and you got referrals and so forth. Even those, you got to stay at least 15% of your time. 15% of your time is probably about 5-6 hours a week. You better be prospecting. And that's not networking. Networking is not prospect. Networking is valuable, but that's not prospecting. Prospecting is picking up the phone, making the call, making it happen with that specific person.
That's, and it's good. And it's interesting in the 60-40 because I'm in the manufacturer's rep world. I rep products into the building materials world. And so most of my customers, all my customers at some point or another are long-term, or right. The hope is they will be. And so I'm probably more 60-40, maybe even 70-30 to maintaining.
Right.
Because I look at it too, and I was thinking about it, and we talk about share a wallet. If as a single manufacturer, or in the case of a rep like myself that reps multiple lines, if I don't have your whole share of wallet, I've got lots of prospecting to do yet with you, right? As with a known commodity, and we know each other. And if I've done my job, I have probably earned the right to bring you almost anything to at least discuss, right?
Yeah, this comes back to this whole thing that we don't close a deal, we open a relationship.
Exactly.
And that's what you're doing. Now, at the same token, though, you can't allow yourself to become so beholden to one customer.
Right.
You know, and I've seen salespeople in the rep business I've got two customers. Well, here's the deal. When one of those two customers gets a head cold, you get pneumonia and die.
Yes.
So right. you've got to have this diversification of business out there, because otherwise you're going to be in trouble real quick.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So let's talk about the high profit selling.
Yeah.
Let's get right down to the brass tacks. Are we going to learn from, what are we going to learn from that book when we buy that?
Well, this is about price. You know, it's win the sale without compromising on price. Because this is the whole deal about how you get confident in understanding what your unique value proposition is. Now, your unique value proposition is determined by what you've learned from the customer. What you've learned from the customer is because of the questions you've asked. The questions you've asked is because of the very specific prospect, your ICP, ideal customer profile. Oh, see where I'm going with this? Mm. You get the price you want when you start off with the prospect you want. We wind up discounting price because we have prospects that don't fit who we serve best.
So you're trying to prospect in a Chevrolet market when you're the Mercedes-Benz dealer.
It doesn't work, right?
It doesn't
right.
work.
It doesn't work. So then you wonder why you're having to discount your price, right?
Right.
And again, this comes back to this whole thing. People will sit there and say, wow, my price is too high. My price is too high. No, it's not your price is too high. You haven't created enough value, because most likely you're prospecting the wrong people. Boom. Yep. You don't understand that.
Yes. So important. Yeah. So I know you're up against a hard stop coming up shortly. A mind for sales. Let's talk about that for a minute, because you and I are in the same mindset there, and we love this world. So what are we going to learn from that?
Well, it all starts with your mind. If you can't sell yourself, why do you ever expect a customer to buy from you? You know, it's kind of funny, but the first book I wrote was High Profit Selling, and because that was all about price. And people said, oh, wow, well, how do I know who to prospect? That's what caused me to write High Profit Prospecting. And then what happened is, you give me all the tools, but my headset's not in the right place. That's when I wrote A Mind for Sales. So I just kind of did the Star Wars trilogy. You know, I wrote the last book first and worked my way back. But yeah, a mind for sales comes down to a couple basic principles. And if you stop and think about this, your most valuable asset is not your price list. It's not your customers. It's not what you sell. No, your most valuable asset's your time. It's your time and how you use your time. So what I always say is there's three key attributes. One is your time. Your objective is to protect your time each day. Two, your objective is to grow your mind. In other words, every day I got to learn something new. Every day. The third one is your network. Now, it's not use your network. It's nurture your network. How are you feeding your network? Oh, you know what's interesting? This whole network thing fits in very well to what we've been talking about earlier because all these existing customers are part of your network. Mm-hmm. I want to nurture my network. I want to help them. What do they do? They're going to in turn help me. I'm going to learn things along the day. That's my growing my mind. And along the way, I also got to make sure that I protect my time. Here's one of the biggest things that I talk about in the book. Not biggest thing, but it's one of the things. How you spend your first hour of the day. I can always tell a high-performing salesperson by asking the question, how do you spend the first hour of the day? Not working, but your first hour you're awake. High-performing people always have a very set routine. They are very set, very, very regimented in how they use. I went to Ohio State. they're very regimented in how they use their time, and it shows all day. But then here's the other thing. It's what I call the 10 a.m. rule. And whenever I'm speaking, I do a lot of keynote speaking around the country and around the world. And I'm speaking to an audience, and I say, I want you to take your smartphones out right now. I want you to set your alarm for 10 a.m. Now, 10 a.m. is not the time you wake up in the morning, but I want your alarm to go off at 10 a.m. because your objective tomorrow morning and every day from now on is to have accomplished something significant before 10 a.m. This is what's cool. If you accomplish something significant before 10 a.m., it's amazing how you love yourself. Oh, wow, mm-hmm. Man, look what I got done. You feel and you're motivated to get a lot more done. Now, what can also happen is that you get something done before 10, and then at 11 o'clock, your boss calls you and your day is blown. Now, to the average salesperson, guess what? They will have not accomplished anything. But see, the person who buys into the 10 a.m. rule, yeah, maybe their day got wasted, but they still accomplished something significant. There's something powerful about the 10 a.m. rule. And I talk a lot about it in the book of Mind for Sales because, again, it comes back to protecting your time. We have far more time in our day than we ever will. Don't sit when people sit there and say, well, I just don't have time to get to it. No. You are challenged by priorities. You are challenged by priorities. And you're not setting your priorities in the most efficient manner. And so, again, I talk a lot about that. And it really is. It's all about when you get your mind head right. It's kind of funny, but in this economy that we're in, people use this R word. I can't even say that R word. You know, that we're, you know, the economy is going to go into an R. I can't R. even say that word. Yep. I refuse to participate. I refuse to participate. See, because again, something I find people who have a great mind for sales, they're incredible optimists. And mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what's going on. In fact, real quick is powerful, comes out of the Navy SEALs. And of course, we've all heard stories about Navy SEALs. We may happen to know some Navy SEALs, maybe people listening to this who were actually Navy SEAL. I take my hat off to them. Thank you for your service to our country. And it's called the 40% factor, the 40% rule. The 40% rule is this. When you get to the point that you are absolutely physically exhausted, physically, emotionally stressed, whatever, you're at your wit's end. Studies have shown that you're only at 40%. There's 60% still to go. And see, Navy SEALs understand that. They understand how to unlock that next 60%. That's pretty powerful.
That is very powerful.
And what does that mean? That it's the reason why there are some people who are just flat out overachievers. It's not that they have an ability to get more done in 24 hours. Oh, they do have the ability. It's not that they have more hours. No, but they have an ability to segment and compartmentalize their day and know what is the most important piece.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
I think that's very important because we get busy being busy.
Yes.
And we're not doing anything worth a crap. Think of a better word. I had a better word, but right? It's no importance to it. We're not getting anywhere. But man, I was busy today.
Yes.
I was busy all week. And you just hit it. That's it. So how do we, in a nutshell, because I want to get you out of here.
Yeah.
How do we, I'm sure you'll talk about it a lot in the book, but how do we train ourselves to get out of that one part of our, I guess, out of our way?
Yeah. Here's the whole thing. Busy is not productive. You have to understand it. There are only two things you want to be working on in your life. And that is things that are going to generate revenue or help you achieve your goals. That's it. That's it. And every morning I can get lost looking at websites. I can get lost ESPN.com. But you know what? Wait a minute. Is that helping me achieve my goals? No. Is it helping me generate revenue? No. Unless I'm having a lunch with a head coach or something, or, you know, famous athlete or something like that. No, it's not going to mean anything. So I have to be very careful to make sure that I use my day and my time focused on that which is going to generate revenue or help me achieve my goals. And achieving my goals is not a to-do list. No. First of all, you set your goals. Then you back into what are the activities you have to do to generate your goals. Real quick, what I love to say is people always say, well, I gotta close more sales. That's the scoreboard. Think about this in a sporting example. If this was the Ohio State Buckeyes were playing Michigan Wolverines, you can look at the scoreboard, okay? And that's the score. But the score is a result of the plays that are run on the field. And both coaches, both teams know that there are metrics, that if they achieve those metrics on the field, then chances are they're going to put points on the board. So we have to look at the activities that we do. And oh, by the way, in sales, I look at the activities on the field. Like if Michigan the Wolverines and the Buckeyes were playing, that game is like sales calls. But that game is executed well because of the practices we've had. Ah, that's the preparation of sales. That is the preparation.
Yep.
We underestimate the time that we have to be in activities and preparing, because all we want to do is focus on the score.
Oh,
bad,
sure.
Bad.
Yep. We all want the Friday night lights at high school, or the Saturday afternoon on national TV, Sunday afternoon on the NFL. But we all know that for the literal hours worth of actual time that college or professional athletes literally involved in a play, it's thousands, if not tens of thousands, of hours of what you just said, of practice, and so that you react immediately, right?
Right. So you know how to react. You know, an NFL quarterback. We'll use Tom Brady. He is now retired, but you know, at most he's going to play 20 or 21 games a season at most if he goes to the Super Bowl. So stop and break this down. Basically, on offense, you run about 70 plays a game. And oh, by the way, if Tom Brady's holding the ball 2.5 seconds into the game, into the play, he's going to get sacked. Mm-hmm. So basically, it's about 70 plays times 2 seconds. Yeah. Well, that's 140 seconds. Yeah. That's like 2.5 minutes times 17. This dude isn't working much.
No. Well, and the other thing with the practice and being prepared for the objections, for the questions, for the whatever, it's just like a back with, let's say Gronk, right? If we're going to run whatever play, he doesn't have to sit there and go, okay, I'm going to run 13 steps. I'm going to fake to the right, cut to the left at a 45, right? He just knows, he just does it.
Right.
Because if he has to think about it, the play's already over.
That's what makes great players. That's what makes great salespeople, because it is so regimented. It is such a routine. It just happens.
It happens. Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. Well, Mark, I know we are getting real close. We got to get you out of here. Go make some money. But any last things before I let you out of here, other than telling you thank you. It was great, great conversation.
I mean, you know, sales is about influencing and impacting people. Hopefully I've had a chance to do that today. Jump out to my website, thesaleshunter.com, because there's a lot of stuff out there. Free. Yeah. How's free. That for value? How's that for
value? I like that. That's a great value. I'm going to see if I can get free Cabernet at the Bravos tonight. What do you think? How will I do?
My objective is I just want to influence and impact people. And if I do that, and if every salesperson does that every day, it's going to be a great day.
It's going to be a great
That's
day.
Cool. Yeah.
Been a great day having you on, my friend. Thank you, sir.
Thank you much. Appreciate it.
All righty. Hey, I'll tell you what, if that wasn't some good stuff, if you're in sales and you're not geeked right now, then I guess you're probably not in sales. You think you are, because that is some really good stuff right there. So buy Mark's books, follow him. I follow everything he does. I followed him for years. Been a pleasure to have him on today. And so go practice your craft. Get better, be better, and go do what you do. Love what you do. Do what you love. Live it, love it, own it. And you know what I'm going to say. Go make today your best day ever. Till tomorrow. Cheers, my friends.
Thank you for listening to Building Wins Live.
You can find information on Randy, Wes, our guests, show notes, and anything related to the podcast at buildingwins.live. On behalf of the whole Building Wins team, don't forget, make today your best day ever. Until tomorrow.